You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your co-host from BleacherReport.com, Chad Dundas. And joining me, as always, from MMA Junkie in USA Today, it is your friend and mine, Mr. Ben Folks. Ben, I think we need to address the elephant in the room.
Okay.
About an hour ago, your wife posted a picture on social media of us attending the literary reading where she performed last night.
It's true.
You and I are wearing the exact same sweater.
Exact same. Not even like just same color or same style. We're talking, if we took off the sweaters, threw them in a pile on the floor, mixed them up, we would not be sure whose is whose.
Same brand.
That's right.
Same color. Mm-hmm. Same make. You know, we were wearing pretty much the same pants, too. But
you're both wearing jeans.
Can't see that in the picture that she posted.
Our glasses are pretty similar.
Someone replied on Twitter to say that if you host a podcast with someone else long enough, you slowly start morphing into that person. And I feel like that's a dangerously viable theory at this point.
That is bad news. I'm not sure what to do with that news.
So are you going to like ritualistically burn your sweater, or should I ritualistically burn mine?
Well, now I have to perform this mental calculus. Whenever I'm going somewhere, I have to first do the math. What are the odds Chad's going to be there?
100%. Mostly, unless you're going to hockey.
I have to think, what are the odds Chad's going to be wearing this sweater? He doesn't have that many sweaters.
True.
That's the thing.
Although I do have that same sweater in several different colors.
Okay. Well, see, I only have it in gray. I think you know what you have to do.
You're right. I'm going to ritualistically burn mine.
This is on you.
I also have the Combat Wombat t-shirt that you're wearing right now. I just didn't wear it for the live stream of this. I guess we dodged a bullet on that.
If it gets to the point where I have to start carrying backup clothes, I'm not going to say I won't do it, because I'll do it, but I won't be happy about it. That's the point when I start to think about, like, I wonder how many, like, sympathy Patreons I would get if Chad died mysteriously.
Wow, okay. Could you think you could continue to operate the Patreon if I died?
Oh, I could operate the Patreon just fine. Operating the podcast might be, it would take a while before people realize that I was scamming them.
How, like, a couple of days? Like, I assume that...
Long enough for me to get across the border, I'll say that.
Unless you and Sir Nigel could, like, orchestrate a clip show, like, edit together old podcasts that sounded like a new one.
If I'm going to
do
all that work...
If you had, like, a Chad Dundas soundboard.
If, at that point, I might as well just keep putting out a podcast.
Speaking of the Patreon, Ben, how are things going with your pledge drive?
Okay, listen, I'm going to be honest with you.
Not good?
We're kind of still at the same point. We may have picked up a couple.
Yeah.
But we got a ways to go. And so I understand that what's happening, people think I don't know what's happening. I know what's happening. I know everybody wants this. Everybody wants the Day of Reckoning drinking challenge to happen. Maybe some people are kind of pacing themselves. I understand that. I absolutely understand that. I also think, though, that there's a lot of people out there who are kind of hoping that maybe somebody else will step up. I know how it is. I've done the thing on, you know, where public radio does the pledge drive, and you think, like, all right, well, there are plenty of other people who like public radio. I don't got to be the one to get out my credit card and get down with it. Somebody else will step up here and solve this problem. And I'm here to tell you, no one else is coming.
Okay, this is starting to get inspiring.
And that's the inspiring part. The flip side is that there's going to be a punishment.
Oh, no. What?
For every week that we go where we are not moving closer to this 900 subscriber goal on Patreon that will trigger the Day of Reckoning drinking challenge, I am going to read to you one fact off of Channing Tatum's trivia section on his IMDb page. That will be it. That's the way you know we're not where we need to be yet.
I wish that you would run some of this by me before we went live.
We all wish things. Did you know, Chad, Channing Tatum was sent to a military school in ninth grade where he joined the football team and intended to get a scholarship to play after graduation?
That's like a fact or trivia?
That's a fact. It's a fact about Channing Tatum.
That seems like a thing you could say about lots of people.
Until next week, unless we hit 900 patrons, then no more Channing Tatum facts.
All right, how about this? What are we at now? Like 735, something like that?
734.
Okay. When we get to 800, let's sweeten the deal here a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to put our heads together, you and me. We'll figure out some rewards that if people are in, if they are in the flock of Patreon people, by the time we get to 800, they're all going to get something.
Okay.
Everybody gets something.
If they, you know, lollygag around and don't get in until like 811, they may miss it.
Yeah, you got to be in under 800. But everyone's going to get special gifts, special co-main event podcast gifts.
Okay.
As long as that's economically viable.
I like it.
We got music this week from our friend Dion Rodriguez, a producer from Deltona, Florida. If you like what you hear from him on the podcast, you can check out more over at soundcloud.com/dbeats7. And again, as you know, that's Z Beats with a Z. Z Beats.
You all right?
Yeah, no, I'm good. Okay. We're going to do something a little bit different this week, Ben, since UFC 229 is upon us. We normally do three rounds on the podcast, as most people who have listened to the show before probably know. Since we're previewing UFC 229, which the UFC itself forecasts to be the biggest pay-per-view in the history of the company, probably going to pick up some stragglers this week, maybe people who haven't listened to the show before. Just want them to know.
Welcome. It's not always like this.
It's going to be a little bit different this week. Instead of doing three rounds, this is going to be like almost like the co-main event podcast version of an Ultimate Fighter exhibition fight. Because we're going to do two rounds. The second round is probably going to be longer than the first. And if we have some time left over, we're going to sprinkle in some general UFC 229 talk. But we're going to talk a lot about Bellator 206. We're going to talk a lot about Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. And then, you know, if we have time left over at the end of the show, we're probably going to get into T. Ferg versus Pretty Tony Pettis and some other stuff that's on that UFC 229 card.
Is there like a sudden victory round?
We'll see. We'll see how it goes, man.
Okay.
Two rounds this week in the co-main event podcast.
Also, if I don't like the way this goes, I reserve the right to go smash one of the doors in your house.
In round number one, if Rory McDonald forgets to show up for a fight, but it only happens in a magical land called DAZN, did it really happen at all? And in round number two, the big banana is finally upon us. Everything you wanted to know about Conor versus Khabib, but were too drunk on proper 12 to ask. You know, the whiskey has really successfully permeated the culture at this point.
It was quick, wasn't it?
Yeah. I just saw the video that the UFC posted where they go inside the training camps. And Khabib Nurmagomedov says, no Irish camp, no Irishmen, no Irish whiskey can stop us. You're helping with the branding, my
playing
guy.
Right into his hands.
We're also going to do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And just saying stuff this week. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Tom McCarthy. He writes, Peppa Pig, Are You Fucking Kidding Me? Discourse.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, you can imagine, since I did not sign up for DAZN, and so did not watch Bellator 206 live on Saturday night.
Okay, this is me. This is me putting a little bookmark on that to discuss later.
Boop. We will discuss that later. Who would have thunk that it wasn't DAZN coverage that created the "Are you fucking kidding me?" moment, but it was the actual UK television coverage of Bellator 206. I did not watch it as it happened, Ben, so you can imagine me waking up on Sunday morning, opening my phone, seeing we got an email to the podcast from Tom McCarthy, and reading Peppa Pig, Are You Fucking Kidding Me? Discourse, and having just no fucking idea what that was about at
all. Yeah, your mind could go a lot of different places there.
I had to do a Google news search for Peppa Pig.
You could have just gone on some MMA websites, put it all together.
I will say, The fact that the Bellator UK broadcast was preempted right before the main event to show Peppa Pig, not the top Peppa Pig news result on my search.
Okay.
So there you go.
What was the top result?
Something about, I think, the new season of Peppa Pig.
I was kind of appalled by how many people, at least in the MMA Junkie story, from Scott Coker to somebody else, from the network, how many people were quoted calling it Peppa the Pig. And I'm just like, what the hell is wrong with you?
They don't have small children
at home,
I guess.
They clearly do not have small children. Because just the mention of Peppa Pig's name, I can hear the music. I feel like going out and jumping in some muddy puddles. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I feel you, dog.
The thing that makes it even worse for these poor, poor fans in the UK is not only did they sit and wait for the main event, but it was like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, imagine you stayed up all night or woke up super early to watch some Bellator. You're happy. You're excited because finally, fucking finally, Bellator has figured out how to show you a live event. It's amazing Bellator has any UK fans to lose at this point. That how long they've dealt with, like, tape delay and, like, no solutions for their problems, really. Still, stubbornly trying to get into Bellator. Trying to follow along with what's going on in Bellator. Finally, Bellator says, good news, no more tape delays. We got the TV thing figured out. You're going to see it live. There's rejoicing in the land. They think, all right, I'm going to stay up for this shit, or I'm going to wake up super early. They sit through all the other stuff. The pacing is kind of suspect. We finally get to where the main event is about to happen, and do-do-do-do-do-do-do, oink, Peppa the Pig. Are you fucking kidding me?
Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, indeed.
Somebody was like, somebody told me on Twitter, they're like, you guys are making jokes over there on your side of the pond. I was really close to tearing my TV off the wall and throwing it. And I can imagine that. Yeah. I can imagine that rage at
right
6 o'clock in the morning.
Before the main event.
Yeah. Feels like a sick joke.
I saw someone put on Twitter, I believe, or maybe emailed it to the podcast. Who do you think would have been more upset, though? Fight fans that stayed up all night and then had the main event preempted by Peppa Pig? Or, like, British parents who woke up super early with their children or woken up by their toddlers and wanted to watch Peppa Pig only to find that on the television was a cage fight.
They were thinking, all right, this kid's up super early. I'm not ready to deal with it. I know. I'll put her in front of the TV. Peppa the Pig will come in here and save the day for me. And instead, you see the moose about to get loose over there on Roy McDonald.
Yeah. Which could be that could be a child's show as well. You the know moose what? Is loose.
And listen, they got to learn about cage fighting sometimes.
That's true. They do. Better they learn about it at home where parents can answer questions than they learn about it down the pub.
Better you learn about it from Bellator where you can kind of ease your way in.
Yeah,
it.
There you go. There you go. This is kind of like an MMA Heidi moment, right? Remember in the 70s when the NFL got the end of, I believe it was a Raiders game preempted by a broadcast of Heidi, and it turned out to be like this insane last-minute comeback, but nobody saw it because Heidi was on the tube.
Okay, I remember hearing about this. This seems like one of the things I heard about through television lore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, before our time.
Yes.
So probably well before our listeners' time.
What do you think? I mean, is this just a funny moment and the UK fans are like, all right, we've been through worse. We'll shake it off and we'll come back. Or the next time somebody's like, Bellator, stay up till 6 a.m. to watch Bellator. Are they like, nope, not this time, Bellator. Not going to get me again. Fool me once. Shame on Peppa the Pig.
Let's just say that I don't think that the number one concern about future Bellator broadcasts is Peppa the Pig.
No. Right?
I think there's other stuff that we should be concerned about that I think we're going to talk about later in the show. Next question this week comes to us from Malta Mourning. He writes, he or she, I guess Malta is probably a masculine name, right?
The real question is which Bundesliga team does Malta play
You
for?
Do a search while I read this. Rampage Jackson and Vanderlei Silva had an entertaining fight over the weekend. They're not too old for the senior heavyweight division. The fight had a finish. They both hate fighting cowards / wrestlers. Okay, come on. Ease up. Ease up now. And now the series stands at 2-2. Does that really mean what I think it means? And would we still watch? So Ben, second round TKO victory for Quinton Rampage Jackson at Bellator 206 over longtime adversary Vanderlei Silva.
Long time. 15 goddamn years.
As Malta Mourning points out here, they're tied now. It's all knotted up 2-2. Vanderlei, I think Q-Jack agreed with him. They want to do this again, brother. They want to do this again, brother, for a fifth time. Are you on board?
I mean, it's not like I can think of anything pressing that I want either one of them to do, other than possibly stop. But honestly, this could have been a lot worse. This was actually a pretty decent fight for the seniors tour.
Considering what your expectations might have been. You know how people talk about certain television shows like The Leftovers. People say, you don't got to watch the first season. Just start with season two. That's when it picks up. Same with this fight. You don't even have to watch round one here because there's not a lot going on. But you start round two right out the gate. Like, classic quintessential archetypal Vanderlei Silva, Quentin Jackson throwing them bungalows at each other's heads.
Now, I went back, I wrote something about kind of the history of this rivalry just because it felt like for a lot of newer MMA fans and not even people who probably consider themselves OGs of the game just were not around back 2003, 2004 when Rampage Jackson versus Vanderlei Silva was straight hot fire as a matchup.
Yeah.
Like they might have been considered two of the best light heavyweights in the world at that time. You know, Rampage, like the first time they fought in the finals of the tournament, Rampage had just beaten Chuck Liddell earlier that night. Everybody was terrified of Vanderlei. So I went back, I watched those two fights again before watching this one. And yeah, and I also watched at least the ending of the third one. And maybe that made the contrast a little more glaring for me. Because you just see them and you're like, it's the same guys. I recognize them. They're just, everybody's a little rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's... You know, once sharp edges are a little smoothed over.
Okay, yes.
Everything is happening a little slower than it used to. The ferocity meter is turned way, way down. And yet, it is, for the most part, you know, still a lot of the same stuff is happening.
Yeah.
It's not happening quite as well. But it's also, like, we've seen a lot worse matchups in the seniors tour.
Oh, for sure.
Like, this was really not bad.
Yeah. It was not bad, and I. One thing I was wondering is, do you think that these guys sincerely still have a rivalry? Do you think that they really dislike each other? You know, they didn't. They did not touch gloves at the beginning of the fight. But to me, I just look at both these guys and I think, man, it's a shame that Vanderlei and Quentin Jackson can't have a couple of soda pops after this is over.
You really, that's what you're, the outcome you're hoping for is friendship?
The two of them in a hot tub somewhere talking about old times, drinking a couple beers.
Okay. I don't know if that's ever, I don't know if you're ever going to get what you want out of this.
Maybe. Maybe it's just my rich inner fantasy life that I want that to happen. Can we talk about the look on Vanderlei Silva? Just for the overall look. I mean, I saw some people saying that they had hoped that Vanderlei would show up to his heavyweight fight just like ripped out of his mind, like Japan Vanderlei was back. I appreciate that this man showed up looking like a semi-in-shape 42-year-old man.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like kind of like the 42-year-old dad who's going to the beach but he can't find his swim trunks, so he's got to go like with an old pair of swim trunks. Because Vanderlei Silva is wearing a pair of what can only be described as enormous fight shorts that are striped like a watermelon.
I like that he's still going to go out there and throw the head kick, but it seems like maybe it's a little tough to get the leg up that far these days. But still, like it's programmed in there.
Yeah.
He's going to throw it, even if he kind of loses his balance when he throws it. The question about should they go ahead and do a best of five, my reservations about it are this. For one thing, you can't convince me that that's going to really be it. Like, you can't be like, all right, it's 2-2 now. We can't leave it there. Like, we could. We could definitely leave it there. But, like, you go ahead and you have, a fifth one. Somebody gets up 3-2. You know the other person is just going to be like, hey, World Series style, man.
Making it a best of seven.
Like, let's keep going. Like, it's never going to end.
Maybe although that's for the best.
You think maybe that they should just keep fighting in perpetuity?
On and on into eternity, man.
I mean, the best reason I can think of to let them just keep doing this is that what else do I want Rampage or Vanderlei to do?
Exactly, exactly.
Maybe we keep them doing this, we keep them away from everybody else. We keep them out of the general population.
Next question this week comes to us from Marcus Rashford, who writes, the Aaron Pico fight, late stoppage much? This was actually part of a much longer email that Marcus wrote us, but we wanted to talk about Aaron Pico versus Leandro Higo here.
Late stoppage much. This is a interesting the verbiage. It's like reading a script from an episode of Friends.
It is. Yeah, it's very now. First round TKO, fourth in a row, I believe. First round victory for Aaron Pico here, advancing his professional record now to 4-1. This is the first guy that he's defeated with a Wikipedia page in Bellator stalwart, right? Leandro Higo has been maybe not a Bellator stalwart, but definitely like the most competent and experienced fighter that Aaron Pico has fought so far. Ben, is Aaron Pico starting to look like the sort of prospect that we were told he was when he arrived on the scene at this point? Yeah,
absolutely.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think he's starting to look like it in all ways. Like physically, the stuff you see him able to do in the cage, you're like, all right, I'm starting to buy the hype. The swagger he's got makes you think that he absolutely believes. He believes what he's selling here right now. So then we get into the difficult question that Bellator faces in situations like these where you're like, all right, people will, they'll go for the slow buildup for a little while.
Right.
And then you get to a point where it's tough to simultaneously tell us, this guy is an important person who is worth your money and worth your time and worth you sitting down to watch, but he's also not ready to jump in there with the, you know, the deep end of the division. Like, you get to a point that becomes less and less tenable to try to argue both those things at once.
Yeah, and I think that's why this Leandro Higo victory was, like, very important for Aaron Pico, because he has successfully righted the ship now after the letdown in his pro debut. But he hadn't really fought anyone of substance. Leandro Higo, I think, is a guy, if you are a hardcore fan of this sport, you kind of know who he is. He's a good fighter, you know, not necessarily over the hill. He's only 29 years old. It felt the least like a fight that was set up for Aaron Pico to win of any Aaron Pico fight. And he comes out there and looks pretty much as dominating and as fast and as powerful as he has looked against all of his opponents. So it's a meaningful win for him. And now I think you're right. The question is, what do you do with this guy if you're Bellator? Because Aaron Pico to me feels comparable a little bit to Kayla Harrison in the PFL, in that I think that both of them seem like people that could be big stars for those companies. Like, if they can muster the ability to kind of build them up and promote them the right way. And obviously Kayla Harrison provides a little bit bigger of a challenge for PFL in terms of, like, finding opponents and providing any kind of buildup for them. But Aaron Pico, like, kind of in the same boat in the Bellator featherweight division. He got into it a little bit with one of the Pitbull brothers, I believe, after this thing was over, told him your time is coming.
You're not even on the Bellator radar until you get into it with a Pitbull brother.
Yeah,
right?
It's like your bar mitzvah, basically. You get into it with yeah. a Pitbull brother. He's over there with the star-studded corner with Antonio McKee, Crazy Bob Cook from AKA, Freddie Roach, and one other person, a luminary of the sport whose name escapes me at the moment. But, like, is it time for Aaron Pico to start fighting name guys in Bellator?
Well, maybe the question is, does Bellator have enough of those mid-level name guys?
Well, I mean, do you fast forward him into a fight with a Pitbull brother, or do you feel like he needs, you know, a handful of more fights before you start really putting the pedal to the metal on the Aaron Pico hype train?
I mean, if we're not going to go straight fast forward to Pitbull brother, then I need to see that there's a progression happening. Because right now, if you get at this level where he just fights a bunch of these people, where every single time he shows up and we say, here's a fight where Bellator is hoping Aaron Pico will show out, you know, you can get a lot of these where, like, these last four fights where he really does show out and people are like, okay, yeah, we're starting to get used to the idea that Aaron Pico is a guy. But you also create a situation where there's only one outcome that you can work with. And that's a dangerous thing to do as a fight promoter.
Yeah. Next question this week comes to us from Ryan Busutil. It came in via the Patreon email. He writes, I was just as interested in all the back and forth between Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier on Instagram last week as anyone else. There's nothing more entertaining than to see the two greatest light heavyweights of all time dissing each other in a comment section of a social media platform where I can also view photos of Norbert, the pet therapy dog. I'm usually for Team DC, hashtag dadbod, but I find the champ coming off as a little hypocritical in this case. Yes, Johnny Bones has twice been flagged by USADA for suspicion of PED use, and that one won't go away even with his exoneration last week.
Exoneration? Is that the term you use?
Slow down. Okay. Slow right. down. But DC can use that to insult him and as a reason to not fight Jones again when he's getting ready to fight another test failure in Brock Lesnar. I don't think Lesnar ever denied that he used PEDs after he failed his test from UFC 200.
Didn't even really bother. Did the foot cream thing. But yeah. When people were like, no, man, your foot cream is fine. He was like, okay, fine.
I know DC is doing it for the payday, but he may want to reconsider his strategy when combating Jones with his words. What are your thoughts? Ben, my only real thought here is they're doing this again, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what's happening here. Yeah. Daniel Cormier has given us the wink and the nod that Jon Jones versus Daniel Cormier is going to happen one more time.
Well, we talked about it last week, I believe it was, that it was hard to imagine that even after Daniel Cormier, say, he gets his big payday against Brock Lesnar as planned, that if the UFC is like, could we tempt you with one more? And they put a bunch of money on the table and another chance to go out there and try to get a win over John Jones. It feels like it'll be almost impossible for him to walk away from that. And this, seeing the way these guys can push each other's buttons like this, only makes me think that that is more likely the case. As for the question about, like, can DC really do it this way? I mean, to me,
yes. The answer is yes.
This feels like an argument with, like, you know, if you're arguing with somebody who you have had a contentious relationship with for a long time, and you've got this one thing, and as soon as the argument starts, it's like they pull a string on you, and that one thing is going to come out. You know, that the thing that Jon Jones has is he's got the wins. Daniel Cormier has the USADA stuff. Like, that's the stuff that each guy is going to reach for as soon as it gets heated, and it's going to get heated immediately.
Yeah. If I said, look, let's pretend that they're definitely doing this one more time. If I said, Ben, do you want to see this at 205 featuring, like, a Jon Jones who has defeated Alexander Gustafsson and become some version of a light heavyweight champion, whether it be interim or undisputed, or would you rather see it at heavyweight for Daniel Cormier's heavyweight title? What do you take?
I think heavyweight.
I agree with you.
I think also you need, or maybe not need, but it would be nice if you're promoting this fight to have a new way to sell it. So it's not just like, all right, these guys where it's 2-0 in favor of one guy are going to do it over again. It'd be nice to be able to be like, Daniel Cormier is a different guy at heavyweight. Yeah. When he doesn't have to make that cut, the power, you saw the way he dropped Stipe. Maybe the power is going to make the difference when Jon Jones has to go up to heavyweight to fight him. That could be all you need.
Right, yeah, and from the outside looking in, right, if you don't necessarily have a huge emotional attachment to one of these two guys, which I think would be hard at this point, but if you don't, I think, you know, seeing a bridge for Jon Jones into the heavyweight division is an exciting thing on its own.
Yeah.
And then to have him go up there and fight Daniel Cormier first would be obviously awesome.
Well, and especially to have him go up there and fight for the heavyweight title against Daniel Cormier would also fulfill Jon Jones's, like, I want to destroy everything that is sacred to you. Like, you went up, you left the division, went and got a title somewhere else. Let me go to that division and take it from you just so that you have nothing.
Yeah. Is any part of this Daniel Cormier agreeing to do business for the UFC in that it would be, hypothetically speaking, Jon Jones's entree into the heavyweight division? Daniel Cormier obviously really wants to win this fight, but like if they were like, DC, we will give you all of this money to fight Jon Jones. Also, we want it to be at heavyweight. Also, we want Jon Jones to continue fighting in the heavyweight division. If you're Daniel Cormier, do you recognize, kind of in like a pro wrestling kind of way, okay, like, I'm kind of doing business for the company here. Like, win, lose, or draw, Jon Jones stays at heavyweight. I'm probably going to retire. I am helping everyone out.
Well, and are you saying that does he leverage that for a huge pay increase?
If he were smart, he would. Right? And yeah, we think he is smart.
Well, especially if I've already done the thing where I'm like, all right, I'm going to fight one more time and I'm going to be gone by my birthday. I'm going to make them really beg me to stay. And even if I have
Daniel Cormier starts sending out beg me tweets,
even if I have it in my mind that I am very willing to do this and I'm not going to walk away from this opportunity, I'm going to really find out what the limit is for what the UFC is willing to offer to get me to stick around.
That would be a good strategy, I think, if you're Daniel Cormier. That's going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have questions, comments, concerns that you want to air to the Co-Main Event podcast in future weeks, you know what to do. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. While you're there, sign up for the Breakfast of Champions newsletter. That comes out every Friday morning to catch you up on the news and notes that we miss when we're not recording the podcast. We've made some changes to the Breakfast of Champions newsletter. There are some new features in the Breakfast of Champions newsletter. Speaking of which, Ben,
mm-hmm,
people who have been listening to the podcast for a long time probably know that one of our solemn vows is that we don't really do fight picks.
That's
on
right.
The show. We will talk in general terms about who we might think is going to win an upcoming fight, but we don't do the thing like a lot of fight podcasts do where we go through like every fight on the card and we say who's going to win. We don't do that. But this week for UFC 229, in the new audio portion of the Breakfast of Champions newsletter, where you can go, if you get the newsletter, and listen to more of Ben and I talking, which our demographic metrics tell us is something that you want.
God bless you.
Even though we don't understand it. you are going to get to hear us make our very specific fight picks for Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, right?
Very specific.
Extremely specific.
Way too specific.
I want a round. I want a winner. I want a method of victory. And I want it to be very descriptive.
I want it to maybe even look 3 decades into the future and you peer into that and see what you can glimpse.
So Breakfast of Champions subscribers, you're going to get that Friday morning in your inbox if you go ahead, proceed to the website, and sign up for the mailing list.
And while you're in the signing up mood, you could also go to patreon.com/comainevent, join the team, move us a little closer to that Day of Reckoning drinking challenge, and this way you might not have to tune in next week to find out what Channing Tatum does with his summers. I can tell you, and I will, if you make me.
Nobody wants that. Anyway, that's going to do it for this portion of the show. We are going to be back in 1 second with round number one. We're going to start talking about Rory McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi. So, Ben, Rory McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi for the Bellator middleweight title was a fight that we were all looking forward to since the time it had been announced. As it turns out, Gegard Mousasi wins via second-round TKO in a fight where he pretty much handled Rory McDonald from start to finish. Were you surprised with the way this one played out and with the ultimate finish here?
You know, I picked Mousasi, but I was surprised at just how totally in control he seemed. And I was surprised that it seemed like maybe during this fight, and we could talk a little bit about Rory McDonald's comments afterwards, but it seemed like you could see Rory McDonald coming to a grim realization. Could you not?
It seemed like he was a man out there coming face to face with his own limitations, for sure. And, you know, as I watched this fight, I was kind of surprised in round one that Mousasi was having a lot of success with his jab. To me, he not only appeared to be the bigger fighter, but also in some ways the quicker fighter, just that he was, you know, making so much hay with the straight punches there against Rory McDonald. In retrospect, I guess it is a little bit surprising that McDonald didn't offer slightly more offense. And then, of course, you get into round two when Rory McDonald goes out there and pulls guard, which is
the Imanari roll, for one thing. Can I ask what's going on over there at TriStar? Or what is it with the Imanari, Rory McDonald especially, in that Imanari role? Because I've never once seen it lead to anything good for him. Is he killing people in training with it? Or are people just like walking into the gym being like, man, I was up all night last night brainstorming ways to stop Rory's Imanari role and I got nothing.
I mean, in mixed martial arts, anytime you do a move where you essentially drop onto your back and you end up pulling the guy into your guard, you know, rightly or wrongly, we see that as like kind of a desperation move. And I mean, I think it's possible that Rory McDonald figured that one of the areas where he would have the upper hand on Gegard Mousasi would be on the ground and, you know, with submissions. And if Rory McDonald regards his offensive guard as like one of his main tools, maybe that's a viable strategy. But I was surprised to see him, you know, pretty early on in the second round go with that strategy. I don't know if it was desperation or not, but just like, you know, as a spectator, when you see it, it comes off that way.
Yeah. Well, and I guess a lot of it maybe does depend on what you told yourself was going to be your path to victory against the bigger fighter. Because usually the way we're programmed to think about these things is, all right, he's going to have you on size and strength. You got to be quicker. And it didn't really seem like Rory McDonald had that against Gegard Mousasi. So, I mean, maybe it is a situation where you're kind of going, you already have kind of a small checklist of things where you think like, okay, maybe here's the areas where I have them. And you get out there in a couple minutes and you figure out that the checklist is even smaller than you thought.
Yeah.
Maybe you start going to plan C and D. I don't know. But, I mean, for Gegard Mousasi, he fights a smart fight, just kind of the best version of Gegard Mousasi is when he is kind of ruthless, but in that very patient and calm way of his. And that's what you saw, especially here in the finish, where he's just kind of like, you know, moving into a better position piece by piece, getting there, solidifying the position, and then he's just going to make you pay.
Yeah.
You know, 2 minutes left in the round when he's got full mount on you, that's a nightmare.
Yep. At his best, like, Gegard Mousasi comes off in the cage as just like a pinpoint accurate, very technical, cold-blooded murderer. And we've seen at his worst, which is still a pretty stinking high bar, at times he looks somewhat listless. He did not have that problem in this fight. Even though Rory MacDonald is coming up from welterweight to fight him, this looked like a matchup that was interesting to Gegard Mousasi. Like, maybe he was able to get up for this one and probably knew that even though Rory MacDonald is one of the bright shining lights of Bellator there and a guy that, you know, Bellator wants to have a successful and high profile career, like kind of a must win if you are the 185-pound champion welcoming the smaller man up to your weight class. And I think Gegard Mousasi fought that way. And once, you know, once he was able to get dominant position on the ground, it was pretty academic from there.
Now I would like to reach over here and retrieve the bookmark that I placed earlier. Whoop.
Okay.
You opted not to order Days In, which is what I'm going to call this, and no one can dissuade me.
Yeah, I did.
Talk us through your thinking here, Chad Dundas.
Well, we talked about it at length last week, right? And, like, frankly, I blew my own mind when you asked me to list all of the streaming services that I currently pay for.
Is this going to be my fault where I forced you into, like, a hard reckoning about your streaming service habit?
No, because I had kind of already come around to the idea that I was not going to get DAZN. Like, I feel resistant of DAZN at this point.
Why?
And then because I feel like I pay for enough streaming services. I don't think I'm alone as like a fan of mixed martial arts that every time someone comes up with their new streaming service, I'm like, really? Another one I got to go out and get? But I'll be honest with you. When I woke up on Sunday morning and I looked at the results, first I looked at that email about Peppa Pig and I was like, what? Did a Google search for Peppa Pig. And then afterwards checked out the results of Bellator 206. I felt regret, man, like a lot of regret, because just looking at the results, it looked like a really good event. You know, you get a lot of stoppages on this main card. Aaron Pico gets a big win. Douglas Lima beats Andre Korshkov.
It's a shitty fight.
See, I haven't watched that one yet. So
don't bother.
Q-Jack beats the Axe Murderer, and then Gegard Mousasi beats Rory MacDonald. I admit to you that I felt like I had missed the opportunity to travel to the magical land of DAZN. And I felt a little bit regretful about that. I still don't know if it's a great strategy for Bellator. And again, it depends very much, I think, on what's going on internally there to kind of like figure out what the deal is here. But this is a terrific card. It's obviously the best card Bellator's done in a minute. And it felt like they hit it from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like they hit it on a weird internet stream.
Maybe because they're trying to cash in on whatever you got rather than and kind of giving up on the idea of building this into a bigger and bigger thing. That's what it feels like to me. And that's what it feels like a lot of, like, it feels like the people in power in MMA have decided that the growth phase is kind of over. That we kind of got the people we're going to get for now anyway. And now we need to focus on wringing some money out of it. And that's kind of how it feels a little bit with the UFC. Going to put a whole bunch of events on ESPN+. Bellator, going to put owned by a damn TV company, and going to put a bunch of events on an online streaming service. For me, like, I signed up for it and trying to, like, go into it by being like, okay, show me, this is your 30-day free trial. Make your case to me, DAZN, to be part of my streaming library. Make your case that you should be another thing that I've sign up with my credit card and then just kind of don't think about and forget about. And, you know, I will say stuff like the actual stream itself looked good, sounded good, good production. I still have an aversion, or at least maybe not an aversion, but there's something that happens in my brain when I'm watching a fight card on my laptop rather than on a TV. Something about it, like I'm telling myself, like, okay, this must not be the big stuff, because the big stuff happens on TV. And I'm sure, like, yeah, you can figure out how to get it to actually play on your TV, but you know I'm not going to do that. You know it's going to take me way too long to figure out how to do that. Some of the functionality is weird, like going back the next day and trying to, like, watch one fight was a real pain in the ass. really, actually, DAZN made me appreciate UFC Fight Pass.
Wow.
Okay. Because UFC Fight Pass, the controls are a little more intuitive. You look at the screen, you can kind of figure out. They make it easy to just, like, pick out one fight. They also have figured out how to make a stream where you can't, like, if you didn't know the results, you wouldn't accidentally figure it out by looking at how much time is left in the stream. Mm. You know, they make that little button where it's like, go to the next fight.
Crafty.
Yeah. Like little stuff like that. And also I look at the DAZN calendar where it's supposed to be like this combat sports thing. And right now it seems like they have some boxing there. They have Bellator. Mm-hmm. They have cricket.
Okay, not a combat sport, to my knowledge.
And cycling.
Again, PEDs-wise, pretty similar, but...
Yeah, well, and I'm looking at, like, the calendar, and the question for me is, like, how are you going to get me to stay on DAZN? Like, is it going to be so that I can watch, like, just Bellator? Because I worry about what happens to Bellator if it gets into a situation where it's telling people, like, you need to pay to see... your regular Bellator shows.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they're going to do that.
And you know, the real tragedy of it is when I watch this Bellator, I, again, as I always am when Bellator puts on a high level show, like struck by this notion of like, oh, Bellator has good shit going on. Like
it does, especially
Mauro Ranallo on the broadcast with Big John McCarthy, running color commentary. You know, they put a slightly different spin on it with, you know, more of a desk type feel, and like they more reporters kind of on the scene, so it does feel a little bit different than the UFC. I feel like it looks good, it feels professional. The in the arena stuff again seems slightly different than what the UFC does, but seems good and professional. Every time I watch it, I'm like, man, I need to watch more Bellator. I feel like Bellator deserves our attention, especially when they can pull off a card like this, and I just have a hard time believing that they're going to get it. If they're over on DAZN, do we know the future of Bellator broadcasts? Are we going to get, is Bellator still going to be on the Paramount Network, or are like, is it all DAZN all the time?
Did you say all DAZN all the time?
Yeah, I just came up with that, like right. On the fly. I'm pretty proud of that. No, all the time.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I would think that this, at least we can count on this welterweight tournament all being on DAZN, like the good stuff all going to be on DAZN. And so I don't know if it really even does anything for you if you're like, oh, yeah, by the way, when we do just like some throwaway Friday night from Uncasville where, you know, the best thing you can hope to have happen is in a front row appearance by a Pitbull brother, like that stuff maybe we'll throw on Paramount still. Like, I don't know if that really would make much of a difference to you if you're Bellator. Like the stuff like this, like where you have this welterweight tournament and it's the first thing you have in a long time where it feels like, this is not just novelty. Like, there is some novelty aspect to it, but it's also legit. Like, you have legit competitors in this. It's actually, like, competitively, athletically interesting based on who you have in there. The title's going to go up for grabs round. 50 Cent's going to give $1 million in goddamn cash to the winner of it.
I guess. Wait, didn't 50 Cent just do, like, a bankruptcy thing not too long ago?
Hence the cash, maybe.
Wasn't he just like, yeah, man, I'm out of money? Because if I was in the Bellator welterweight tournament, I would want that cash.
That's why they insist on the cash.
I would want that cash to be in escrow right now.
The point I made, and I mentioned this in my video earlier, was I mean, imagine you're Douglas Lima, and say you win this tournament, and you're pretty happy.
Yeah,
the 50 Cent gives you a suitcase full of cash, and you're like, he was already maybe going to have a hard time going to his bank and being like, I have $1 million deposit to make. Now he has to walk in there with cash.
It's not really going to be cash, though, right?
They're looking at him going, so where did you get this money? And he has to say, no, don't worry about it. It's fine. I got it from the rapper 50 Cent. So clearly everything is on the up and up here.
Yeah, I think that teller is going to be sent in for the manager.
Yeah, there's a button you push for a robbery, and then there's a button you push if somebody brings in a briefcase full of cash that they say they got from 50 Cent.
Yeah.
Those buttons are kind of right next to each other.
Uh-huh.
And that's they're pushing the hell out of that button.
You're going to need to run that through some federal regulators.
They're just going to bring dogs in immediately to sniff that money.
Okay, just let's wrap this round up with a little more talk on Rory McDonald. I don't know. We didn't cover this already, but he put out a statement after this fight was over, saying that he never really could get into it mentally. Like, he never really got the Ferrari out of the garage, so to speak. And we've, you know, Roy McDonald has been an interesting guy from a psychological perspective his whole career. What did you make of this? As an excuse, I don't know if you want to call it an excuse, but like as a, an explanation of what happened out there against Gegard Mousasi, and this notion that I feel that even though Rory McDonald lost this fight because of the Bellator welterweight Grand Prix, and $50 million and the eventuality of maybe getting sprayed down with champagne, I feel like Rory McDonald's still going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Douglas Lima did kind of get sprayed down with champagne in the, in the locker room.
No, I know. I know.
But,
like the world's least joyous champagne spraying.
Yeah. Right. And then hands him the bottle, and he was clearly just about like, okay, I'm just going to put this down. And then you could tell somebody from off camera was like, no, pose with the bottle like you're happy about it. We're trying to sell this luxury champagne brand. About Rory McDonald, I mean, I wondered, because he specifically said after he made the comment about how he couldn't really mentally get going for this fight that he had no excuses.
Yeah.
Is that saying like, hey, I don't have any excuses, but if not for my knee, I probably would have won this fight. Like, or does that, when you phrase it like this way, does that count as not making an excuse?
I think it's making an excuse, but like,
he's not necessarily saying he would have won even.
Right. Yeah. But like in retrospect, does it hold water? Cause like, you know,
yeah.
I didn't notice it at the time, but then after he said that, I thought about it and I was like, well, that was a weird Rory McDonald fight. Like, he didn't really do anything. He never really did get going offensively. So, I mean, I don't know what mentally was going on with him or why he couldn't really get started, but like, it seemed like he's telling the truth in some way.
I mean, it's the kind of excuse. I mean, again, I don't even really want to call it an excuse, but it's the kind of explanation that I buy simply because, like, it doesn't really get you anything to say it if it's not true. And I think that people maybe overlook the extent to which this is a possibility in MMA especially. And, like, how a different kind of a sport it is where you train for weeks, you know, a couple months probably for this one night. And you got to go out there and be on. And anybody who's ever done any kind of like martial arts kind of stuff can tell you, like, some nights you show up and you feel really good and everything's clicking. And some nights it's the exact opposite of that. And so it stands to reason that it could definitely be that way in an actual cage fight, like in a competition. And you don't get the opportunity that people in other sports do. Like, you go out there and you play a football game and nothing's clicking right. And you go in the locker room at halftime and everybody kind of is looking at each other going, hey, what the fuck? Let's get it together. And you have a chance to sit down, look at actually what has gone on in the first half, talk to each other about it, get a moment to breathe, come up with a new plan, go back out there and try to get your heads right for the second half. And MMA, you just don't get that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not firing right coming out of the blocks, you never really get a chance to course correct.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem thinking that he's telling the truth about it. It's not like people are going to be like, oh, well, okay, maybe he would have won the fight if he had just been in the right headspace.
Yeah. Rory McDonald 2-3 now in his last five. This is his first loss inside the Bellator cage. Like I said, I don't necessarily think it's a deal breaker for him. I think we all understood what kind of task this was moving up to 185 to fight Gegard Mousasi. But I feel like it turns up the heat a little bit on the Bellator welterweight Grand Prix. I feel like if you're Rory McDonald and Bellator really wants you to be, you know, the face of the company in some ways, you kind of got to win that now and retain your title every step of the way and carry on being the 170-pound champion. Anyway, that's going to do it. We should do Are You Fucking Kidding Me?
Yeah, I'm ready to do Are You Fucking Kidding Me.
Well, what's your Are You Fucking Kidding Me then, Ben, before we move on to round number two?
Well, Chad, we mentioned this a little bit with the whole Peppa the Pig snafu, but how is it that you are going to stream your event? You know, you don't have to worry about all the TV shit anymore. You're just doing a streaming thing. You set yourself out a 6-fight card that you're going to stream, and you can't get it done in your window. It's a streaming event. Like, a lot of the other, like, problems that you have are kind of taken out. And this thing, watching it on DAZN, bit of a slog. Bit of a slog to get through, which is the one thing we should never say about a streaming event. That should be what I'm purchasing with my $10 a month, is the ability to not feel like I'm sitting there being dragged slowly through your fight card. Are you fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me?
There's only a couple things I ask out of a live stream. One, that the stream works. And two, that it doesn't feel like the pain in the ass of watching cable TV.
Well, Ben, this week I got a shout-out longtime friend of the show, Jessica Hudnall, because she made a Facebook post about the August McGregor website and some of the products that they offer over there, which led me to the August McGregor website. A lot of coming soon.
Okay.
A lot of pages that still just say coming soon over on the August McGregor website.
So you can build anticipation.
But there are, you know, I would say around three different product offerings, Ben. And I know some of this isn't going to blow your mind.
Okay.
T-shirts over there, some of which I believe say, I whoop ass and look good or something like that. How much do you think they cost?
T-shirt? Well, hey, I mean, well, you know, regular t-shirt, bargain basement prices. I'm looking at $19.99. I know this is elite level t-shirts, so I'm going to say $30.
$56, Ben.
What?
For an August McGregor t-shirt. White men's hooded sweatshirt that also says, I whoop ass and I look good. $125. But my favorite, Ben. This week's Are You Fucking Kidding Me? Mesh ball cap.
Okay.
$45.
For a mesh ball cap?
Yep.
Not fitted or anything?
Mesh ball cap. Are you fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me?
Don't make me quote Macklemore. Don't make me say that's $50 for a t-shirt. Because it is. That's going to do it for round number one. We will be right back with round number two.
Well, Chad, Saturday night, October 6th, T-Mobile Arena in Paradise, Nevada. Your boy, Conor McGregor, is going to go out there against UFC lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov, try to put the first professional loss on Nurmagomedov's record, try to reclaim the UFC lightweight title, and so we are told, it has already been decided that this will be the biggest fight in UFC history. Let's start there, if you will. First of all, do you believe that what we're looking at here is the biggest fight in UFC history to date?
It's really hard to tell, man, and I don't feel like I'm a pay-per-view swami like Dave Meltzer or something like that. It doesn't feel as though this pay-per-view has gotten a terrific build-up. It doesn't feel like the UFC has really pulled out all the stops in terms of publicizing this bad boy. I saw someone tweeted this morning, does it feel like McGregor Nurmagomedov fight week? It might have been Josh Gross. And I thought to myself, not really. Like, we haven't gotten the lead up to this that maybe we expected, that maybe we got from other Conor McGregor fights. Yet at the same time, I don't necessarily know that I feel like I personally have my finger on the pulse of the pay-per-view buyer. And if this was the biggest UFC pay-per-view event of all time, I wouldn't be all that surprised. I would be surprised if they got 2.5 million buys. That would kind of blow my mind.
Well, one question I feel like we got to ask ourselves is, what do we mean by biggest?
I feel like number one in terms of like pay-per-view buys, right?
Okay, isn't well that then, what we're... Then it's a pretty easy like math question to work on, because right now the top pay-per-view in UFC history, UFC 202.
Yeah.
The Diaz-McGregor rematch.
Right. Four of the five are Conor McGregor fights.
That's right.
Four of the top five. The other one is UFC 100.
That's right. The only other one is UFC 100. Yeah. So what we're really asking ourselves is, does Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov do more than 1.6 million buys? I kind of think it does.
Yeah, and it's kind of a test of the of Conor McGregor's marketability and like selling ability at this point, right?
Especially because he's been left alone to do it, basically.
Right. And well, he's been out of the cage since November of 2016 when he fought Eddie Alvarez. He had this long, you know, vision quest that he went on. He fights Floyd Mayweather Jr. in a boxing match in August of last year. And then he also like, in a way that I've never really seen before, simultaneously establishes himself as a bona fide mainstream sports star, while also appearing as though his life might clatter off the rails at any moment.
Any like moment.
A string of increasingly bizarre behavior from Conor McGregor, culminating in the bus attack during the UFC 223 media day at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. So I have no idea like what kind of drawing power this dude has at this point. He's still inside the bubble to us. He still feels like a megastar. He feels like maybe bigger than ever, especially since it seems that the bus incident is really only going to like enhance his bad boy mystique. On a mainstream level, do you think that he is bigger than ever? Do you think that like people are going to follow him from the Mayweather fight to this fight? Do you think anybody knows who Khabib Nurmagomedov is? And do you think that like that alone, like just because of Conor McGregor's like Q factor, basically, that this is the biggest selling pay-per-view of all time.
It's really difficult for me to try to figure out what people say or think or know about Conor McGregor outside of our MMA bubble, just because he's been such a huge part of the world for the last few years. I don't know. I mean, I am starting to get the sense where like people I know who don't care about the UFC are like, hey, are you getting that fight on Saturday? Because they want to come over and they don't want to pay for the pay-per-view, that kind of a thing. Like that is happening. So that you've passed that level of UFC stardom necessary for that. The thing to me is, if you look at all the different things that we might use to gauge, like, what's a huge UFC fight, what's a big, you know, historic, important fight, this one really hits them all. Like, it really is everything that you would ask for if you were trying to promote a prize fight, because you've got a huge star in Conor McGregor. You've got an undefeated champion in Nurmagomedov. It actually is the fight to determine who's the best lightweight in the world. It doesn't seem like, you know, you're making the money fight and ignoring some other more pressing or like more athletically meaningful matchup. Like, this is the fight.
Yeah.
All the pieces are right there for it.
Right.
Like, I don't know what else you would. And like, you also got the rivalry angle. One of the guys tried to throw a hand truck through a bus window at the other guy.
Yeah.
So you've got that too.
The thing that makes the thing that makes a UFC pay-per-view an all-time box office smash, though, is not necessarily drawing the people inside the bubble, right? And we've talked about this a little bit in the past. It's almost as though when we talk about these big spectacle pay-per-views, hardcore MMA fans are sort of irrelevant, and I mean that not in a pejorative way, but like, we're all buying this.
Yeah.
And the UFC knows that. They've already, in a sense, got our money. The people that make up the difference between a good pay-per-view event and a historic UFC pay-per-view event are the kind of like wishy-washy casual fans who, like, you know, have no idea who Ovin St. Preux is, but like want to watch Conor McGregor fight.
Yeah.
We reached those people?
The people you need to get here are the people who don't even know that Tony Ferguson is in the co-main event.
And probably don't even know who Tony Ferguson is,
right.
Really.
Yes.
But like, do you think that the UFC has successfully reached those people? Does Conor McGregor being in the vicinity somehow set off an alarm in those people's mind brains where they're gonna watch this fight?
Do I think that the UFC has reached those people? No, not really. I think that we're counting on that Conor McGregor has reached those people, because it really doesn't, like, unless I'm already in like some area where I'm consuming MMA media, either by watching a UFC event, you know, reading about MMA on the internet, I'm not, at least in the course of my daily business, coming into contact with anything trying to tell me about this fight. And that's not been the case with some other like past like Conor McGregor fights, where it's like, okay, you could just be in a bar, look up on the TV and see an ad for it. You could come across ads for it when you're not really doing anything MMA related. And that doesn't feel like that's happened here. And especially there, you know, no real media tour. You did one press conference in New York City. I think Dana White made some vague remark about how they're going to have some fun stuff for it. But here we are, fight week, and it seems like we're just doing the usual like kind of paint by numbers approach to promoting this fight. Like, I can't tell if that's like how much of that is an intentional thing of like, okay, Conor McGregor thinks he's this big superstar, bigger than the sport. Let him go out there and do it by himself. How much is it that you already think you're going to make a certain amount of money on this no matter what? And it's extra money spent promoting it is just eating into the profit margin. I have a hard time figuring it out, because it seems like it's just been cruise control.
Yeah. A minute ago, you talked about how this is the fight and it checks all of the boxes in terms of, like, I think both interest in terms of being an MMA fan, like the actual fight itself, and also the stuff that makes up a big event. I feel like it's an interesting and maybe admirable fight for Conor McGregor to take as his return fight.
It really is.
Because we've talked a lot, you know, essentially since he became featherweight champion, about how much political capital he enjoys inside the company, about the stuff that's important to Conor McGregor. So when he comes back after almost 2 years away, I think it'll be something like 639 days or something like that since the last time he fought in the octagon by Saturday night. He could have taken any fight that he wanted. He could add a third fight with Nate Diaz. I guess probably George St. Pierre isn't currently on the table because of his health issues. But like basically Conor McGregor walks in the door, says the fight he wants. The UFC is probably going to make that fight. He chose, or at least was convinced to take, what might be the most difficult stylistic matchup on the entire game board. Granted, it's also maybe the fight that's going to make him the most money. It's also the fight for the lightweight title that he never lost, but had stripped away from him while he was on his walkabout fighting Floyd Mayweather Jr. He's talked a little bit this week, or I guess last week at the pre-fight press conference about how he doesn't need to be here anymore. He's set for life. He talked a little bit in and around Mayweather McGregor about legacy and how once his family was financially set, he was going to start concerning himself more with legacy. Does this strike you as like the start of like the final act of Conor McGregor's MMA career and one where he's always going to care about money? He's always going to get paid the money that he wants. But do you buy it when Conor McGregor says, I am concerned now with my place in the history of this sport? And is the Nurmagomedov fight evidence of that in any way?
Yeah, I think it's definitely evidence of that. I think it's also that, like, I've wondered if Khabib Nurmagomedov does not roll up on Artem Lobov in the hotel.
Right.
Do we end up here now?
It's hard to say, isn't it?
I mean,
he wasn't the champion when that happened. Right. He wasn't even the champion when McGregor threw the dolly through the window. He had yet to fight Rage and Al.
Say all that other stuff happens, and the, you know, trying to kind of roll up and slap around Artem, Connor's boy, and that whole thing doesn't happen. Like, say Khabib goes out there, and all the other weirdness takes place, and he ends up still fighting Rage and Al Iaquinta, wins the lightweight title, is standing there with the belt. Does Conor McGregor come back and be like, all right, I'm going at that guy because he has the belt? Like, because that does not usually seem like it's been necessarily the most important thing to him. Like, do you think then, with no extra special motivation, does he go like, all right, Nate Diaz trilogy sounds good. Let me, like, settle that one once and for all. You know, he could seriously walk in and be like, give me Tony Ferguson. And they'd be like, all right, we can work with that. We'll give you Tony Ferguson. Like, I'm ready to believe that it is somewhat about, like, the legacy. Like, hey, here's what everybody says is the toughest fight, stylistically. It's the undefeated guy. It's the guy with the belt, all that stuff. I also think that guy slapped around my friend, and I really got worked up about it. I think that we can't pretend that that does not factor in here for it, especially for somebody like Conor McGregor right at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about what is motivating Conor McGregor for this fight, because it feels to me like this is the first Conor McGregor fight in a little bit where money is not the motivating factor for him. Like,
yeah, I mean, money-wise, like, he could have done just as well with a Nate Diaz trilogy or a Tony Ferguson fight or whatever,
right, like,
or Max Holloway.
Yeah, like, clearly when he fought Eddie Alvarez for the lightweight title at UFC 205, he wanted to become the champ. That was super important to him. I think we could all tell that. But it seemed like that also, you know, it was financially motivated in certain ways. Clearly, I think the Nate Diaz feud was financially motivated. It does seem like he is motivated by other factors for this fight. One of them clearly is revenge. And, like, I think you can say what you want to about Conor McGregor, but he seems like a pretty good friend. Like, he seems like he actually cares about Artem Lobov. He seems like he supports the guys that he trains with, clearly still trains at SBG in Dublin, has not deserted them for, like, a bigger camp, you know, or a, like, a super team. I think that he legitimately values where he came from and understands, like, the people that helped him along the way and feels a loyalty toward them, which I think is all in Conor McGregor's favor. But it is interesting to note that, like, it seems like he is interested in this fight to get the title back, to, like, establish or further his legacy and, like, kind of get some revenge for his friend, which is not normal Conor McGregor storyline stuff for us. And that makes it, I don't know if I want to say weird, but interesting that he also seems like one of the main things he wants to do here is sell his whiskey. right? Like,
well, you got some whiskey.
If it was any, it, right? If it was anybody else in the world, wouldn't we be like, oh man, Conor McGregor just wants to sell his whiskey? Is he thinking enough about the fight? Is he distracted by the whiskey? Is the whiskey a distraction for him? But we're not having that conversation, right? Because I think we've been taught to believe by Conor McGregor that he can juggle all of these things and still show up on fight night and be great.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like you said, that there is, he does get a lot of due daps here for taking on the toughest stylistic matchup available.
Yeah, he's the underdog here. He's the betting underdog. Yeah. Slight, but still the betting underdog.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised at how slight an underdog he is. To go right at a guy who his entire thing is the thing people still say that you are weak at.
Yep. The like, two things, wrestling and cardio.
Okay, yes. Well, yeah, I mean, if you were concerned about legacy, that seems like that's what you would do, right? Is you would be like, okay, who's the guy who everybody thinks like, okay, he doesn't want any part of that. Give me that guy. And honestly, try to imagine a scenario where you wake up Sunday morning and Conor McGregor has knocked out Khabib Nurmagomedov with a big left hand.
Yeah.
Then everybody is just kind of shaking their heads in awe at that point.
Absolutely. And it's right up there with knocking out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds. It's right up there with wearing out Eddie Alvarez and winning the 155-pound title. It's definitely like a McGregor milestone moment if he does that.
And what chance would you give him to do that?
I'm not going to talk about it yet. We'll talk about it on Thursday for the Breakfast of Champions. Let's talk about Khabib Nurmagomedov, though. Because we've spent, you know, 15 minutes now talking pretty much only about Conor McGregor. Khabib Nurmagomedov is a guy that even inside the MMA bubble, and even though he is the UFC lightweight champion, I feel like, at least in America, we feel like we don't know this guy all that well. He seems very private. It seems like he has grabbed a hold of some people in the fan base with his, like, sort of, like, ice cold, almost like a Rocky character, like Ivan Drago-style trash talk. But he's not a guy that we feel we know on a personal level. Like, I think we feel like we know Conor McGregor, or like we knew, you know, Anderson Silva or somebody like that. What does he get here if he wins this? And like, what is the future in some way of the lightweight title here if it stays on Khabib Nurmagomedov?
You know, I was kind of wondering, when you talk about feeling like we know him, does it seem like the more we get to know him, maybe the less fun it is? Because remember when he was just the guy with the hat and he had like the kind of broken English trash talk and people were like, ha, 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 this is awesome. And then when there's
videos, number one bullshit.
Yeah. And then when there's him giving out money like to homeless people to do push-ups for his amusement, and like him being upset about a rap concert in Dagestan and some of that stuff. And you start to go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's not really that fun.
I don't feel like that's all that unique to him as a fighter, though. I feel like there are a lot of fighters that when you really start to figure out what they are about as people, it gives you pause. And I don't necessarily know that like there's anything really troublesome about Khabib Nurmagomedov. Like, in many ways, he seems like, again, like kind of an admirable dude in that like he comes from nothing. His family still largely lives in Dagestan, and he goes back to visit them. But he is kind of risen above that and moved to America and gone to AKA to learn how to fight, to be like an MMA star. I think all of that is like good stuff. But then you hear about, you know, relationships with, like Conor McGregor brought up at the press conference, relationships with the, you know, Magomedov, his benefactor from Russia, who's now in prison in Russia. And like, I think that there is some reason to like look at Khabib Nurmagomedov and be like, we don't know what this guy is all about. But I don't know that there's anything that like you would look at right off the bat and be like, these are red flags. He seems like maybe he has a slightly different sense of humor.
Yeah. Maybe it approaches it from a different worldview at times. Yeah. I mean, to me, it seemed like the challenge laid out here in terms of like how to sell this fight would be telling everybody like outside the MMA bubble who Nurmagomedov is and why he matters. And it doesn't seem like that happened. It doesn't even seem like there was really that much of an effort to do that.
Yeah.
It was like, to the extent that there was an effort, it was, let's explain the whole bus incident on the loading docks. And then, you know, one guy has the belt. So obviously you see the shiny gold thing. That means that that's the guy you should care about too.
Yeah.
Like that seems like that was kind of the extent of what we were offered there.
Honestly, if you took only the like press event, wouldn't the story of this fight be proper 12? Because like that's sort of what the whole thing was about, honestly. Is this a fight where win, lose, or draw, both these guys, their next fights are already set? Because I feel like win, lose, or draw, Khabib Nurmagomedov fights Tony Ferguson next.
If Tony Ferguson beats Anthony Pettis.
Right, which I think is assumptive at this point. And win, lose, or draw, Conor McGregor, obviously hinging on George St. Pierre's health. But I think win, lose, or draw, Conor McGregor fights George St. Pierre, if that's on the table.
Well, there's a lot of potential monkey wrenches that could be thrown in that. For one thing, you were asking the UFC to go ahead and book Nurmagomedov versus Ferguson again.
Well, yeah, there are some problems there.
To me, the question is, if Nurmagomedov goes out there and he does exactly what he says he's going to do, say he takes Conor McGregor down, make him tired, make him humble, talks to him, beats him up, it's a long night, and by the end of it, we are absolutely certain that Nurmagomedov is the better fighter. Does he then turn right around and defend the title in some, you know, kind of forgettable event that does 600,000 pay-per-view buys?
Well, they'd be lucky to get 600,000 pay-per-view buys, wouldn't they? Like, UFC doesn't get 600,000 pay-per-view buys anymore, do they?
I mean, so was that just what we're assuming, that, like, yes, there's no way he's going to get any of this to rub off on him?
Well, yeah, we've talked about this before. It's not like you beat Conor McGregor and you absorb his powers.
Nate Diaz kind of did.
Yeah, but Nate Diaz was already a thing.
Yeah.
And I think Khabib Nurmagomedov has some potential, like, as an MMA star. I think, like I said, people inside the bubble seem to like him just because of his personality and stuff that he does. But, like, if he beats Conor McGregor, it's probably not going to be the style of fight that everyone looks at and is like, awesome, show me more of this. Except for,
do you think it'll be a lot of people talking about what a cowardly move it is to take somebody down like that?
Well, I mean, if we're just going off listener mail, maybe. Yeah. All right, let's do Just Saying Stuff, Ben, and then we will get out of here for this week. Ben, we've spent an awful lot of time talking about Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov and the rivalry there. But you also know that at UFC 138 that Artem Lobov is on the card, right? That's next weekend. Or no, that's October 27th.
I mean, Fight Night 138.
Yeah, Fight Night 138 at the Moncton Event Center over there in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada.
Granddaddy of them all, the Moncton Event Center.
Artem Lobov is fighting a fella by the name of Zubeira Tukugov.
Nailed it.
Who also happens to be out of AKA... He also happens to be from Russia.
What a coincidence.
I'm just saying, you guys can only push this angle so far. I will accept Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. You can book Artem Lobov against exactly one of Khabib's boys, and I will accept that. But this is it. This is the end of it. After this. Just saying.
You're just saying? What if, you know, the fight with McGregor and Nurmagomedov in some kind of contentious fashion, and then the loading dock of the Moncton Event Center, the rematch goes down.
We got to do a tag match, right?
Oh, man, Moncton is not ready. Chad, this week, my Just Saying Stuff. So it's as the hours tick down before the Bellator fight on DAZN, and I am looking around social media, I see on Twitter a post from your boy Scotty Coker.
Okay.
And has a picture of Rampage Jackson and Vanderlei face-to-face from like the weigh-ins a day earlier or something. And the message, the caption that Scott Coker goes with is, "This is how stories end."
Yeah, I saw that one.
I'm just saying, I don't think he meant that to sound as dark and foreboding as it did.
Yeah.
When two guys in their 40s looking like the fatter, older, slower versions of them, their previous selves, are about to fight for a fourth time. Just saying, you got to think about kind of the subtext there. This is how stories end.
Just
like,
saying.
It seems like you're promising me somebody's going to die.
A little bit like of unintentional melancholy.
Like of kind of natural causes.
From our guy, Scotty Cokes.
Just saying.
That's going to do it for this week's Co-Main Event Podcast. You better come back next week, because that's the episode we're going to tell you all about all of the stuff that did happen.
How else will you know?
At UFC 229. Plus, you're not going to want to miss Ben's trivia.
Don't make me do it. Don't make me hit you with more Channing Tatum bio information.
More trivia about your boy Chan.
So you need to go to patreon.com/comainevent. Help keep this podcast independent, ad-free, and Channing Tatum trivia-free.
As of right now, though, we are done. We are through. We are out. I mean, how many weeks of Channing Tatum trivia did you can drum up?
Man, you have no idea. And listen, I know what you're going to ask me next. And yes, I will make up some trivia if I need to. I'm not above that.
Hold on. You're just going to make stuff up about Channing Tatum? About your boy Chan?
See, this is part of the reason why you want to keep me from doing this. Why you want to go to patreon.com/comainevent, sign up, become a supporter of this podcast, so that it doesn't come to this. So you don't have to sit there 6 weeks from now going, is this a real Channing Tatum fact or a fake Channing Tatum?
I won't know what to believe anymore.